It feels like we're standing at a very specific, very high-pressure intersection of the world of healthcare technology.
It's a massive collision point, isn't it? On one side, you have the federal government, specifically CMS, pushing harder than ever for interoperability. They want the pipes wide open. They want data flowing seamlessly between patients, providers, payers, zero friction. And then on the other side, practically barreling down the highway at us, you have the absolute explosion of AI in clinical settings, plus, you know, the looming very real threat of quantum computing.
It's a bit of a paradox. It feels like we're being told to open all the doors to let the fresh air in, while simultaneously realizing there are some very smart roles waiting on the porch. To help us navigate this, we are looking at a document that is pretty much hot off the press. It's a technical evaluation from Transformative IP regarding their PQC Plus platform. And I want to set the expectation right now. This isn't a marketing brochure we're reading today.
No, absolutely not. This is a reference document written for the people in the engine room, security architects, chief data officers.
Yes.
The people who actually lose sleep over packet inspection and API vulnerabilities. It is dense, it's technical, and it is trying to answer a massive question. How do we architect security when the computers attacking us are powerful enough to break the locks we've relied on for 30 years?
That is the mission for this deep dive. We need to explore how software can bridge that gap between sharing data, which is the mandate, and protecting data from AI and quantum threats. And I'll be honest, usually when you combine quantum security and government regulation, you get something dry as dust. But reading through this, this feels existential.
It is existential. Yeah. Because we aren't just talking about the compliance boxes anymore, checking a list to avoid a fine. We are talking about a fundamental shift in the physics of data protection. If you are a CISO in 2026 and you're using a 2024 playbook, you are likely already breached. You just don't know it yet.
That is a cheerful thought to start us off. But okay, let's get into the weeds. We need to start with the baseline, because the document spends a lot of time on the CMS interoperability framework. It lists the five pillars we all know: patient access, provider access, data availability, network connectivity, and identity security. Basically, the rules of the road.
Right. And let's give credit where it's due. Those pillars are excellent for what they were designed to do. They were built for static data exchange. Think about the classic use case. I am a doctor at Hospital A. I need your record from Hospital B to treat you. I request it. The system verifies my credentials, and it sends the file, point A to point B. It's transactional. It works.
Simple enough, a digital courier service. So where does it break down? Why is this suddenly not enough?
It breaks down because the framework was designed for humans using software. It wasn't designed for AI ingesting software. The document refers to this as the AI paradigm shift. AC, an AI doesn't just move data or look at it once like a doctor reading a chart. It ingests it, it learns from it, it retains it in its weights.
The document specifically mentions the failure of the TPO paradigm here: treatment, payment, and healthcare operations. That's the old IPS standard we've used forever. Why does AI break TPO?
Because TPO assumes discrete, predictable use cases. I am using this data to pay a bill. Done. I am using this data to set a broken arm. Done. But when you feed patient data into a large language model, an LLM, that model eats the data at scale. It effectively memorizes parts of it to understand context. The current interoperability rules say, sure, you can access this data for treatment, but they don't have a mechanism to say, you can use this to treat the patient, but you cannot use it to train your model to be smarter for the next million patients.
That is a massive distinction. It's the difference between reading a book and memorizing the book to write a sequel.
Exactly. And here is the technical kicker. Once that data is in the model's weights, good luck getting it out. You can't just delete a specific patient record from a trained neural network without potentially retraining the whole thing, which is prohibitively expensive. This is why the document argues that the point A to point B model of security is dead. We need security that understands the content and the intent of the request, not just the identity of the requester.
This leads us right into the gaps. The report identifies five critical AI governance gaps where current standards, even the modern ones, just completely fail. I want to drill down on gap one, because this one stood out to me as a legal minefield: AI-specific consent.
This is the policy fiction I was alluding to earlier. Right now, if you go to a hospital, you sign a general consent form for treatment. In the eyes of a legacy system, that's a binary flag. Consent equals yes. But technically and ethically, there is a huge cavern between clinical use, using AI to help a doctor diagnose you right now, and training use.
Training use being the AI taking my specific genomic data or my history and using it to build its own proprietary brain.
Precisely. The report highlights that patients generally haven't consented to their data being used to train a commercial model that gets sold to a third party or helps a competitor. But current legacy protocols, HLS7, FHIR, they don't natively distinguish those permissions. It's just access granted. So you have the situation where chief data officers are technically violating patient trust, not out of malice, but because their infrastructure is too blunt to handle the nuance.
So we're flying blind on consent. Then you have gap two, continuous model monitoring. To me, this just sounds like standard IT maintenance, but the report frames it as a critical safety issue.
Think of it as model drift. An AI model isn't static code like Microsoft Word. It evolves, or rather, the world evolves around it. If you trained a diagnostic model on data from 2020 and try to use it on the population of 2026, it might fail. Demographics change, disease patterns change. I mean, look at how COVID changed respiratory baselines.
The audit logs don't catch this.
Standard audits track access, who opened the file, Dr. Smith opened the chart. They do not track accuracy degradation. They don't flag that the AI gave Dr. Smith bad advice because it thinks it's still 2020. The report argues that governance needs to monitor the model's performance in real time, not just its access logs. It's about efficacy, not just security.
That brings us to gap three. AI data rights and transparency. This is where they introduce the concept of AI nutrition labels. I love that term, but what does it actually mean for a system architect?
It's metadata, rich obligatory metadata. Clinicians need to know, who was this model trained on? What are its blind spots? If a model was trained entirely on data from urban academic medical centers in Boston, it might be terrible at diagnosing patients in rural New Mexico. The document argues this transparency needs to be surfaced right at the point of care via the API. If you're an architect, you need to be building pipes that carry this nutrition label alongside the actual data payload.
Okay, so we have consent issues, we have stale models, and we have blind spots. That's already a massive headache for any CDO listening. But then we get to gap five. And I just say, this is where the document shifts from administrative challenge to sci-fi horror.
Yeah.
We're talking about post-quantum vulnerabilities.
This is the big one. This is the harvest now, decrypt later threat, HNDL.
HNDL. It sounds like a plot device from a Christopher Nolan movie.
I wish it were just a movie. It's a very practical, very expensive strategy being used by adversaries right now. We know that current encryption, the locks we use for everything, RSA, ECC, the little padlock icon in your browser, relies on difficult math problems, specifically factoring huge integers.
And quantum computers are good at math.
They are exceptionally good at that specific type of math. Shor's algorithm proved that a sufficiently powerful quantum computer can solve those factoring problems exponentially faster than a classic supercomputer. When that hardware comes online at scale, it will snap those encryption keys like dry twigs.
But to play devil's advocate with me here, those computers don't exist yet, at least not at the scale to break 2048-bit encryption. So why is the report screaming immediate necessity?
Because of the harvest now part. Bad actors, state-sponsored hackers, massive criminal syndicates are stealing encrypted data today. They are scraping databases. To them, it looks like gibberish right now. They can't read it. But they are storing it, exabytes of it. They're just waiting for the hardware to catch up. Once they have the quantum computer, maybe in 2029, maybe 2030, they unlock everything they stole 5 years ago.
So they steal my credit card info today and unlock it in 2030. Well, my card is expired. Who cares?
Your credit card expires. Your genetics do not. Your mental health history does not. Your HIV status does not. Health data is permanent. If they decrypt your medical record in 2030, it can still be used to blackmail you, steal your identity, or target you. That is why the document calls this an immediate necessity. You aren't protecting data for today. You are protecting it for a future where the locks are broken.
That is terrifyingly clear. We usually think of data theft as a smash and grab, but this is a long game. Okay, let's pivot to the solutions before we lose all hope. The transformative IP report details two main modules, smart compliance and smart infosecure. Let's start with smart compliance. They call this the governance engine.
Think of smart compliance as a smart bouncer for your data. It uses something called the Model Context Protocol, or MCP. It sits at the gateway and intercepts every single data request in milliseconds.
But before the AI gets the data, the bouncer checks the ID.
It checks way more than the ID. This is where we solve that binary consent problem we talked about. Instead of just saying yes or no based on a user role, the system uses granular consent. It can mask data dynamically based on intent.
How does that look in practice? Walk me through a transaction.
Okay, let's say an AI agent requests your record. The smart bouncer, smart compliance, checks the rule set. If the request metadata indicates clinical treatment, it lets the full record through so the doctor can save your life. But if the request metadata says model training or analytics, the system automatically anonymizes your identity. It happens on the fly. The AI gets the clinical data points it needs to learn, blood pressure, diagnosis, outcome, but it never sees your name, social security number, or address.
So it creates a synthetic version of the record for the AI.
Effectively, yes. It decouples the clinical value from the personal identity. And the document also mentions jurisdictional awareness, which is huge for the U.S. market.
Right, because health laws vary wildly from state to state now.
Exactly. The system uses geolocation and metadata. It knows where the patient resides, where the provider is, and where the data is trying to go.
The report specifically mentions sensitive category protection.
Correct. It automatically tags data related to reproductive health, substance use, specifically those tricky 42 CFR Part 2 records, and mental health. If an AI tries to move reproductive health data across state lines to a jurisdiction where that might be legally risky or prohibited, the system can automatically block or redact that specific part of the record based on local laws.
So it prevents you from accidentally breaking the law just because you hit share. It turns compliance from a policy manual that sits on a shelf into code that runs in real time.
That's the strategic shift. Policy is code versus policy is paper. It's the only way to manage the speed of AI.
All right, so that handles the governance gaps. Now let's talk about the heavy artillery, smart InfoSecure. This is the quantum defense. How does it actually stop the quantum threat we just panicked about?
This is where we stop relying on 1990s math. The platform implements the new NIST standards that were finalized recently, FIPS 203, FIPS 204, and FIPS 205.
I see those numbers in the report. FIPS 203 is key encapsulation, 204 is digital signatures. What makes them quantum proof? Why can't the quantum computer break these?
It's the underlying math. Instead of factoring numbers, which quantum computers love, these use lattice-based cryptography.
Okay, I need an analogy. I'm picturing a garden lattice.
Imagine a massive multidimensional grid, a lattice with points scattered everywhere. The math problem involves finding the shortest vector between two points in this grid, but the grid exists in hundreds of dimensions simultaneously. It's like a maze that keeps folding in on itself. Even a quantum computer gets lost in that maze. It simply cannot solve the problem efficiently enough to break the code. It's a completely different class of mathematical hardness.
So we swapped the lock. That makes sense. But the report says something else here, something that really caught my eye. Embedded policy encryption. It calls this the definitive defense against the harvest now, decrypt later threat. This sounds different from just better keys.
It is. This is the aha moment of the entire evaluation. This is where we move from attribute-based access control, which is what most people use, to attribute-based encryption, or ABE.
So what does this all mean? What's the functional difference?
In the old way, the encryption, the lock, and the access control, the bouncer, were separate. You encrypt the file, you put a password on the server. If a hacker steals the encrypted file, they have bypassed the bouncer, they take the file home. Now they just have to pick the lock at their leisure.
Right. Once they have the file, the server's rules don't matter anymore. They can brute force it offline.
Exactly. But with embedded policy, the policy is baked into the math of the encryption itself. The data isn't just locked with a key. It is locked with a condition or an attribute.
Give me a specific scenario. How does this stop the hackers from 5 years in the future who already stole my file?
Okay. Imagine a file is encrypted with a policy that says, this data is valid only during session X on January 21st, 2026. Now, a hacker steals that encrypted file, they store it. 5 years later, in 2031, they use a massive quantum computer to try to decrypt it.
They have the file, they have the computing power.
But the math won't work, because part of the decryption equation requires the current time to be January 24th, 2026. The attributes don't match. Even if they have the key, the equation fails to resolve because the time attribute is wrong. It is mathematically locked to a moment in time that has already passed.
Wow. So the data essentially self-destructs. Or rather, it just remains permanent gibberish.
It remains gibberish. The stolen data is useless because the policy conditions, time, session, identity, can never be met again outside the original context. It prevents the decryption from ever succeeding.
That completely neutralizes the harvest now strategy. Mm-hmm. It binds the data to its context. If you take the data out of its context, like stealing it and taking it to a server in Russia 3 years later,
yeah.
It simply refuses to open.
Precisely. It's data that knows where and when it's supposed to be. It introduces a temporal dimension to cryptography that we simply haven't had at this scale before.
That is incredible. And I imagine for a security architect, that's the holy grail. You're sending data out into the wild, but the rules travel with it.
That's the definition of zero trust. You don't trust the network, you don't trust the device, you only trust the math wrapping the data.
Now, I want to touch on validation. Because often with tech like this, it's just a vendor making promises in a white paper. But the report highlights that this platform holds an FDA authority to operate.
That is a very big deal. An FDA ATO is rare. It means this isn't just a commercial claim. The federal government has validated this solution at a level that exceeds HITRE-REST. It's been vetted for use in federal environments. For a security architect, that stamp of approval saves about 6 months of due diligence. It tells you the controls are real.
And regarding deployment, it's not just for the cloud, right? The report mentions flexibility.
No. The report specifies it can be cloud-native, at a FedRAMP level, hybrid, or fully air-gapped.
Air-gapped. That's for the paranoid folks.
Yeah.
Or the super secret stuff.
It's for high-value targets. Think national genomic databases, military health records. Air-gapped means the key ceremonies happen offline. No internet connection physically possible. If you are protecting a nation's genetic heritage, you probably want that air-gapped option. It ensures that the root keys can never be exfiltrated remotely. It's old-school physical security meets new-school quantum math.
Makes sense. So looking at the summary here, PQC Plus seems to check a lot of boxes. It meets all 26 criteria the CMS mandates. It closes the AI gaps on consent and monitoring. And it solves the quantum threat via this embedded policy ABE stuff.
It really is a comprehensive answer to the problem we started with. It satisfies the need to share data, the CMS mandate, while ensuring that sharing doesn't become a suicide pact for privacy from AI and quantum.
The report mentions a strategic takeaway, the shift from policy as configuration to policy as cryptography.
That's the headline. We are moving from rules written in a settings menu, which can be changed or bypassed, to rules enforced by math. It is a much higher standard of protection. It effectively means the data protects itself, regardless of where it travels.
So if you are a listener, maybe you're a security architect, a CDO, or just someone trying to understand where your health data is going, this raises a massive question about legacy infrastructure.
It does. We are building AI systems today that will influence healthcare for decades. We have health data that lasts a lifetime. The question is, can we afford to protect that 2026 data with security designed for the 1990s?
And the answer seems to be a resounding no. The transition to quantum resistance isn't a future project for the roadmap in 2028. It's an immediate necessity because, as we learned, the data being stolen today is already at risk.
Absolutely. If you wait until the quantum computers are here to upgrade your encryption, you have already lost. The harvest has already happened. The time to encrypt for quantum is now, while the data is still secret.
It changes the way you look at a server log, that's for sure. Something to think about the next time you sign a digital consent form or the next time you design a data pipeline. We want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the technical realities of PQC Plus and the future of health data.
It was a pleasure to analyze this. It's rare to see a solution that actually scares me with the problem and then relieves me with the math.
Keep asking questions, keep checking your encryption standards, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.